It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Saturday, October 22nd, 2022. I'm Kevin Cork. Interest rates are rising, gas prices soaring, and home values are falling. But if you think it's all bad news on the U.S. economic front, well, think again.
People think we're going into recession, but not necessarily so. I mean, the economy has a lot going for it, actually. It's fundamentally in pretty good shape.
I'm Ryan Schmelz. It's being called one of the most interesting races in the midterms, as incumbent Republican Utah Senator Mike Lee's path to re-election doesn't go through a Democrat, but rather a longtime Republican running as an independent who also happens to have support from the state's Democratic Party. Will his efforts be enough to unseat the incumbent in the red state of Utah?
And what I think McMullen is trying to do is he's trying to essentially turn what Mitt Romney's Utah Senate approval looks like into an actual voting coalition.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. In Washington, the main focus is on the upcoming midterm elections, and the economy, as usual, is the bellwether issue for most voters. But outside the Washington Beltway, just how well or how poorly the economy functions means much more to the average American family than who'll control the levers of Congress in January, and for good reason.
By my calculation, the amount of oil being released from the reserve is reducing oil prices by about $10 a barrel, give or take.
Mark Zandi is chief economist of Moody's Analytics.
And that translates to about 40 cents on a gallon of regular unleaded, all else being equal. So, you know, right now, gasoline nationwide is, say, $3.80 a gallon, I'm rounding. Without the release from the SPR, we'd be close to $4.20. So, not a game changer, but certainly meaningful and helpful. And I think continued releases would be very helpful in the current context.
Maybe helpful in the current context, but probably ruinous from a national security perspective, wouldn't you say?
Well, this is what you use the SPR for. I mean, we are in a crisis. I mean, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I think, qualifies for a period when you'd want to call upon the SPR. And there's still a lot of oil in the SPR, about 400 million barrels after this most recent release. So there's plenty of room to maneuver here. I think the other thing the administration did that was helpful is say that they would add back to the reserve if oil prices get down close to $70 a barrel. And that's particularly important because it sends a signal to producers, energy oil producers, that there will be a source of demand there if prices start to come down. So that hopefully will continue to incent them to put more rigs in the ground and produce more oil. So all in all, I think this is what you use the SPR for, a time of crisis, and I think this qualifies.
That's certainly a big story we'll be following throughout the winter months. I mean, we've seen home heating costs absolutely skyrocket, and so people are looking for relief anywhere they can get it. Let me ask you about housing. We'll get to inflation and the Fed rate in just a bit, but housing starts retreating just a bit. Mortgage demand at a 25-year low. Are we at the bottom here, or will things get worse before they get better?
No, we're not at bottom in housing. I mean, housing is the most interest rate sensitive sector of the economy. So no surprise as the Fed steps on the brakes and interest rates rise. Mortgage rates, as you said, I think are over 7%. That's, you know, more than double what it was a year ago. That's a very large increase in a short period of time. And that's those higher rates are conflating with the previously high house prices and undermining affordability. So I would expect to see continued further weakness in home sales, which is housing demand, housing construction, the data we got, and probably most importantly, in terms of what it means for the broader economy, lower house prices. House prices are now declining in many parts of the country, and we've got a ways to go here. So no, I'd buckle in. There's more weakness to come.
You know what? I always like to mention this. I know 7.5 sounds extraordinarily high compared to, say, my 2.9% mortgage rate, but historically speaking, it's not so bad. I mean, I remember the Carter and Reagan years when it was, 18%.
Now you're bragging, 2.9%. Oh, that's real. That's wonderful. I mean, you got pretty close to the bottom. Not the exact bottom, but you got pretty close.
So got
that's
close.
You're locked in. Yeah, you make a point. Mortgage rates have been higher historically. I will say, by my calculation, through the business cycle, mortgage rates should be about 5.5%. That's where we should expect to see them settle in when things are more normal, more typical. Obviously, we're a ways from that, but I would expect that to be the kind of mortgage rate we would get long run. But you're right. I mean, if you go back into the 70s and 80s, which was obviously a miserable time, mortgage rates were in double digit.
Scary times back then. Let me ask you about the Fed. There's been much made of the interest, and more ways than one, but in this particular case, the interest to tamp down inflation, which means, I don't know, if we're looking at 75, if we're looking at a full point, I'm not sure how you see it, but all the tea leaves I've been reading make me feel like we're probably due for a couple of hikes before year's end. What say you?
Yeah, rates are going up. I mean, I think the Fed has made that crystal clear, about as clear as they make anything. They're going to raise rates at least 0.75 point in early November, another 0.5 point in December, and then another 0.25 point in late January. But at that point, it gets, obviously more difficult to forecast. But my sense is they'll probably stop, pause. They know that the rate hikes they put in place work on the economy with a lag. It takes time for that to kind of filter through. So they'll probably stop, take a look around, see what kind of impact it's having on the economy, the job market, the wage growth, and inflation more broadly. And if things are moving in the right direction, namely if inflation is moderating in a significant way, that may be the end of the rate hikes. And that would be really good. That gives us a fighting chance to avoid an outright recession. But if inflation is not coming back in fast enough, they'll step on the brakes even harder. And at that point, we're going in. And that probably means recession by the end of 2023.
Am I being irrational when I suggest to friends that it could probably end up at around 10% before we take the foot off the accelerator?
I'd be shocked if we got there, only because the economy is going to break long and the financial system will break before we get to 10. I don't think the economy can digest that. I think the economy will go into recession. If we go past 5%-ish, I think at that point, there's going to be the housing market is going to be weak enough. Manufacturing is going to be struggling significantly. The rest of the economy is going to be really seizing up, and I think we'll go into recession. So I think it's going to be pretty tough to get to 10% before something breaks.
Let me ask you about recessionary fears. I've heard different definitions. I look at it this way. You, on the one hand, yes, you can point to GDP and negative growth, and you can say, well, clearly, Kevin, we're in a recession. But on the flip side of that, Mark, look, the unemployment number is pretty extraordinary. The employment numbers out there, if you're looking for work, you can certainly find it, generally speaking. So I'm not sure if we're technically in a recession. How would you unpack that?
I can say, Kevin, definitively, we're not in recession. We're just not. I mean, the economy is creating way too many jobs. I mean, 350,000 per month. I mean, just for context, you need 100K at most to maintain stable unemployment. So that means unemployment, which, as you pointed out, is very low, 3.5%, is headed lower. We got layoffs are at record lows, lower than any time in history. Unfilled positions, they're coming down, but they're very high. People quitting their jobs at a very high rate, you just don't do that unless you can think you can find another job, a better job pretty quickly. So, given all that, this is not a recession. At the end of the day, recession is determined by the Business Cycle Dating Committee, a group of academic economists at the National Bureau of Economic Research. I just don't think they're going to consider this a recession. But not that recession risks aren't high going forward. They clearly are. And under any scenario, the economy is going to struggle in the coming year. But I don't think we're anywhere close to a recession.
Well, just remember, you're going to owe me a beer if interest rates get around 10%.
I'll more than a beer. You know, pick your favorite cocktail.
You're talking. A little bourbon sounds good. Let me ask you about the political implications. I know you're a numbers guy, but here in Washington, politics sort of is the overarching storyline for just about everything. And given where we are, I'm wondering if you feel like the economy is something that helps or hurts the administration as we move into the new year. I know it sort of was a good start to the summer. Things seem to be receding just a bit now. How do you see things moving as we get into the fourth and into the new year?
Oh, it hurts. The administration, the Democrats in the midterm election. I mean, I think for most people, they're really focused on the inflation. And the thing that irks people most, I think, is going back to the gasoline prices. $4 a gallon, that's roughly where we are, is, you know, barely tolerable. If it goes up at all, then, you know, I think it just completely undermines people's views of their own financial situation. And then that'll be reflected at what happens at the polls. And as I said, I think the next year under any scenario is going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. We are going to see more layoffs. Unemployment is going to start to rise. Recession, if we don't go in, we're going to be pretty darn close. So I just don't see how that helps out of the incumbent party.
I always like to have a conversation where I give the guest a chance to give us our talking point walking away. What's the big thing that you want people to take away from our conversation as they sort of drive by and pick up bits and pieces about the economy?
Well, I there's no reason to panic here. You know, we got lots of jobs. We got very low unemployment. People are working. So be cautious, be prudent. I wouldn't go out and make a big ticket purchase here. I certainly wouldn't take on debt and leverage. And if I had high cost debt, like a car, a credit card or a personal loan, I'd start to pay that down as fast as I could. So, you know, I'd prepare for the worst, but I don't think I'd panic. I'd continue to do what I do. So, you know, right now the economy is actually doing okay. It's strong. So, you know, let me put it this way. I maybe have the hand on the proverbial economic bunker door, but I wouldn't be going in, at least not yet.
And a recession isn't a sure thing.
No, it's not. You know, I think lots of folks think it is inevitable. It's really bizarre. I mean, from the CEO down to my next door neighbor, people think we're going into recession, but not necessarily so. I mean, the economy has a lot going for it, actually. It's fundamentally in pretty good shape. So, you know, we'll need a little bit of luck on the pandemic, on the Russian invasion. Nothing else can go wrong. And some really reasonably good policy making by the Federal Reserve. You know, they're going to have to calibrate things just so. But, you know, we have a fighting chance to get through this without a recession.
Ever the optimist. Mark, thank you so much. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Senator Mike Lee of Utah was one of several Republicans who refused to endorse then-candidate Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential election. Lee would instead cast his vote for a former CIA intelligence officer and former chief policy director of the House Republican Conference. That candidate was Evan McMullen, a former Republican who ran as an independent conservative alternative to Trump and got over 20% of the vote in Utah. Fast forward almost 6 years, Lee now has the endorsement of former President Trump in his bid for re-election. The man he voted for in 2016, though, is now running against him as an independent with the full backing of the state's Democratic Party while trying to tap into anti-Trump sentiments inside and outside of conservative voters.
Look, I mean, I think Mike Lee has been similar to many other Republicans in that they were a lot more skeptical of Trump in 2016 than in 2020.
Kyle Condick is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball, the University of Virginia Center for Politics newsletter on American campaigns and elections.
Part of it was that I think Trump governed in some ways that was acceptable and positive for conservatives. Also, frankly, I think that being a critic of Trump sort of was a place where a lot of Republicans didn't want to be. If they criticized Trump, they would hear about it from their own voters. And so I think in a lot of ways, a lot of Republicans just decided to get in line effectively behind Trump. And again, you know, Mike Lee is an example of that, but you could find many other examples of that transition among a lot of other elected Republicans.
Right. And so what is interesting about this race and why do you think it matters to the country outside the state of Utah?
It's interesting in that you do have, instead of Mike Lee just facing a Democrat, and I mean, you know, Republicans have dominated Senate races in Utah for many decades. You know, Lee is being challenged by Evan McMullen, who ran as sort of a protest conservative candidate for president in 2016 and, you know, got a significant share of the vote in Utah and a few other places, even though he didn't really do all that much from sort of a national perspective. But McMullen has tried to sort of, say that he wouldn't necessarily caucus with either party, which is easy to say, maybe difficult to actually do in practice if McMullen didn't get elected. And it's what I think McMullen is trying to do is he's trying to essentially turn what Mitt Romney's Utah Senate approval looks like into an actual voting coalition, because Romney has positive approval in part because he gets, you know, positive ratings from at least some Democrats, some Republicans, and some independents. And if he could sort of turn that into a voting coalition, that might be a pathway to victory, even in a Republican state like Utah. You know, I still ultimately think that Lee is the favorite here, despite the fact that this is a more interesting and competitive race than it would be if it were just if it was just Lee versus a Democrat, in which case I don't think we'd be talking about this race at all.
Now, you just mentioned Mitt Romney, and he is not endorsed in this race, and it doesn't look like he's going to before Election Day. Does his lack of endorsement and him staying out of the race, does that hurt or does that help any candidate?
I mean, it probably helps McMullen in the sense that if Romney did step in, you'd expect him to endorse his fellow Republican Senate incumbent. And in fact, Mike Lee has made it clear that he wishes that Romney had endorsed him would endorse him down the stretch here. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think that it's sort of telling about where Romney stands. Of course, Romney has been an outlier in the, you know, on the Republican Senate side in some ways. Supporting conviction during the impeachment trials for Donald Trump, not once but twice. Romney has in some ways become, someone who has been kind of a consistent Trump critic in the Republican Party than many of his colleagues.
And just because candidates like Romney or Evan McMullen are critical of President Trump, well, let's be real here. They are conservatives, and McMullen clearly is a conservative. But in this race, he has the endorsement of the Utah Democratic Party, which has pretty much gone all in on him. Is this unique? And what do you make of that?
I wouldn't say that it's unique, because we have seen an instance similar to this 8 years ago in Kansas. There was a independent candidate named Greg Orman who ended up being the only significant challenger to Republican Senator Pat Roberts that year. And the Democrats, just like in Utah this time, you know, decided to, you know, effectively to just get behind him and to not run their own candidate. Or to not support their own candidate in that race. And so I guess from a Republican perspective, it sort of makes it more convenient to say, hey, this person's an independent, but they're effectively, you know, backed by Democrats in this race. So maybe you should think of this person as Democrat. That Pat Roberts, Greg Orman race was very close until the end, probably closer in polls than this race has been, although polling's been all over the map in this Utah Senate race. But I remember, you know, down the stretch of that election, there was a whole lot of question marks about whether Roberts would win. And then he ended up winning by like 10 points or so. And, you know, I think it's possible this race, you know, maybe goes along a similar trajectory, in that McMullen, just like Orman, probably would do better than a Democrat would do in the race. But these are still states where you'd rather be a Republican running in a Senate race.
And that's right. Utah is, you know, a pretty strong red state, but it's also a very unique state demographically. Obviously, It's very different from a lot of states in the country, particularly when it comes to the religious demographic. But, you know, Donald Trump may not have had the best numbers that you'd expect a Republican to have in the last couple election cycles. You know, McMullen getting 20% of the vote in 2016, Biden getting doing pretty well in 2020. Is that something we need to consider when we follow this race?
Yeah. You know, look, I mean, it's interesting. You know, Romney, when he ran for president as a, you know, Mormon Republican presidential candidate, he was kind of like the perfect candidate for Utah. And he ended up winning by 48 points, 73-25 in the presidential race in 2012. And then you go to 2016 and Trump only got 45% of the vote, you know, 27% for Clinton, and then 21% or about 20% went to McMullen. But then in 2020, in sort of a more traditional two-way race, Trump still won 57-37 statewide. So, you know, even though I think there are, you know, it might be that sort of the Mormon block of voters is maybe more skeptical of Trump than other blocks of stalwart conservative voters. You know, Utah's still a Republican state. You'd still much rather be the Republican candidate in a statewide race there. And so that's why I think it's still an uphill battle for McMullen.
And do you think there is enough sourness amongst the Utah electorate for McMullen to have a chance here? Does the bipartisanship he's trying to preach, is that going to be strong enough? And is there enough maybe sourness towards Mike Lee for McMullen to have a chance here?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think McMullen has a chance. I just think it would be, you know, it would be a pretty big surprise on election night if McMullen actually ended up winning. Because again, just there's a lot of structural factors that I think benefit that benefit Lee in this race. So, you know, keep it on your radar, but I don't think it's like a, you know, it's a true toss up race. And, you know, it's also difficult to handicap from the standpoint of, we don't really know what McMullen would do if he actually got elected. You know, then he would have to, you know, be a member of the Senate. He'd have to try to get committee assignments, and the committee assignments, you know, come through the party. So, you know, that's a big question mark that would have to be answered if, in fact, he ended up winning.
And what do you make of the campaigns they've kind of run so far? Have you kind of watched the debates? Obviously, McMullen has really strongly campaigned on what happened on January 6th and in many ways brought up any involvement Mike Lee may have had or is accused of having when it comes to January 6th. And you've also kind of seen Mike Lee kind of walk this back a little bit and say that he's been willing to criticize his own party, vote against his own party. You know, what do you kind of make of the messaging from each candidate and the campaigns they've run?
I think that it's fair to say that Lee has sort of felt the heat a little bit in this race, which, I mean, he should. I mean, it's a different kind of circumstance, and, you know, no candidate should feel like they can sort of skate to victory. And I don't think Lee has done that. You know, it's, in some ways, it's like the race represents kind of like a microcosm of sort of some of the struggles within the Republican Party, in that like McMullen is a never Trump Republican and Lee is a, you know, is essentially a Trump convert and I think kind of a mainstream Republican in a lot of ways. And, you know, within the Republican Party, I think certainly the pro-Trump mainstream faction has clearly won out over the never Trump Republicans, but maybe there's a way to cobble together, even in a red state like Utah, enough, you know, Democrats, independents, and the sort of lapsed Republicans to make a go of it in the Senate race. And again, that's what McMullen is banking on.
Kyle Connick, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
That'll do it for this Saturday's Fox News Rundown from Washington. Join us tomorrow as we continue our midterm election coverage by taking a look at the state of the Georgia Senate race. We'll also look at what a GOP-led House of Representatives could look like if the party flips the chamber. I'm Ryan Schmelz. Thank you for listening to the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.